Brethren, in 1996, Joy and I were married. We actually celebrated, as I think was stated last week, our 28th anniversary. And that same year, there was a movie that came out of Hollywood that was, at the time, romantic comedies were starting to be a really big thing. And there was a movie that was entitled Jerry Maguire. Some of you may remember that. It was a Tom Cruise movie. He was a sports agent, and, you know, there's leaving his big job, starting his own career, and there was a secretary who saw the dream and the vision that he had, and so she left the big corporate office and followed him, and they ended up starting a relationship, ended up getting married, and everything. It was a very successful movie, and there were a lot of quotes that came out of it, that one of them, particularly, that my wife and I use somewhat humorously. But it was actually a surprisingly good movie. The couple, as she had worked for him, they had started this relationship, they fell on hard times, difficulties. It wasn't as easy as they had hoped. They really struggled. And that struggle also projected into their relationship until there came a point where they separated. And then he had some amazing success. He got the contracts. They got the athletes that came into his business. It was incredible. Almost overnight, everything changed. And the scene that maybe some of you will remember, Tom Cruise as the agent, and the young woman was Renee Zellweger. He comes back, and her living room is full of women. They were having, I don't know if it was a book club or a ladies club, something. And he has to walk into this place with all these women. And there's his wife, and he has to try and win her back. And so he's like, okay, well, I guess I got to say this in front of everybody. But he says, all this stuff just happened. All the success we've been wanting and we've worked so hard for, it all came in. But he said, at the time, I realized that it didn't matter. Because you weren't there. All the money doesn't mean anything if I don't have you. He said, it wasn't what I wanted anymore. And then he looks at her and he says, you complete me. This is a very popular movie. It made a lot of money that year. Probably because everyone wants that kind of relationship. We're looking for that person that we need, and we need them to need us to be whole with. This is how we envision our marriages. You know, the idea of having a spouse that completes us, that we're not quite full without them. I'm telling you that story because I want us to have this in mind as we think about the bride of Christ. We're entering into our very last message in the series that I've been doing entitled, Which Church Am I? And we've been looking at the seven churches of Revelation as the bride of Christ. Each of these churches were called out as the ecclesia to become one with Christ. And he writes to each of them individually because all of them had different issues, different personalities, different places where they were from, difficulties, strengths. The way we're going to look at Laodicea today is hopefully a way that maybe we haven't looked at it before. Because it is a letter which Christ writes to his bride. And again, the issue or the part that I want us to think of is what it takes to be completed, to be whole, to need Christ. My title today is Laodicea, Poor, Blind, and Naked. Laodicea, Poor, Blind, and Naked. I want to begin by turning to Revelation 3, and we'll just read this letter, this love letter, that Christ has sent to his bride in Laodicea. Verse 20 of chapter 3. Excuse me, not verse 20. Verse 14. And to the angel of the church of the Laodiceans write, "These things says the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot. Oh, I could wish you were cold or hot. So then, because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will vomit you out of my mouth. Because you say, 'I am rich, have become wealthy, and have need of nothing,' and do not know that you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. I counsel you to buy from me gold refined in the fire, that you may be rich, and white garments, that you may be clothed, that the shame of your nakedness may not be revealed, and anoint your eyes with eye salve, that you may see. As many as I love, I rebuke and chasten. Therefore, be zealous and repent." In verse 20, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in to him and dine with him, and he with me. To him who overcomes, I will grant to sit with me on my throne, as I also overcame and sat down with my Father on his throne. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches." That'd be kind of a rough love letter to receive. It is, out of all the letters which are written to the churches, to the bride of Christ, this one is the one that stings. This is the letter that nobody wants to get. It's the letter which is also most often used as we talk about other churches. Of course, the purpose of these series that we've been doing is, what church am I? Because this is, all of these churches have issues, have problems, have attitudes. And this is personal. It is to us. Now, one of the things that we have to understand is that Christ was writing to the church that is in Ephesus, there in the city, and everyone is influenced by the city in which they live. This is their surroundings. This is their culture. They're a part of it. Just as we today are the church of God, and yet we're Americans. USA. The things that happen around us, a part of our culture, the world that we are raised up in, it is a part of who we are as well. And it comes in to the church of God. And these are the things that we have to be aware of. Because not everything is bad, but some of it could lead to the loss of our salvation, could lead us astray, could cause harm to the marriage that we are looking forward to with our soon coming groom. So let's look at the history and what it was that this letter would have said specifically to the people of Laodicea. The things that they would have known what he was talking about immediately. Laodicea was about 40 miles or so east of Ephesus. And it was established sometime before 300 BC. It wasn't called Laodicea to begin with. It was later on named Laodicea by a Greek king, Antiochus II. Antiochus II had not expected to be king. He had a father and he had an older brother, and his older brother was then disinherited. His father died suddenly, and he was king. But he had already married. He had a wife whose name was Laodice. And they were close. They had children. They seemed to be a very successful couple. And he named this city in her honor. Now, there's a little irony here. Sometime later, he got into a war, which he couldn't win, with the Egyptian, Greek pharaoh, who was Ptolemy II. He got involved in a battle, in a war with him. And when he finally sued for peace, part of the treaty was that he had to divorce his wife and marry the daughter of Ptolemy II, so that any children that came from that marriage would now rule. This is something that happened historically often. Marriages were not about love. They were about politics, about power. And so this was forced on him if he was to have peace and keep his throne. He would have to take his wife, whom I assume he loved, and put her away. I assume he loved her because, you know, oftentimes when rulers put away wives, they, you know, lost their heads. You know, they were put in a tower somewhere. He actually set her up quite well. He gave her lands and estates in many areas that guaranteed her wealth, and in fact her lands were still considered royal lands, though she was no longer the wife of the king. And with his new wife, the daughter of Ptolemy II, they had a baby, which was part of the agreement, part of the requirement, who was now heir to the kingdom. Well, time went on, several years, and Ptolemy II died. Well, the guy who forced this on me isn't here anymore. And Antiochus II went back to his bride, his first one. He left. But how many of you have ever heard the saying, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned? Yeah. He died very quickly. And all evidence points to Laodice, as she poisoned him. And then they have hardcore evidence, because then she also killed her rival, the daughter of Ptolemy, and his heir. This, of course, started another land of war in Asia, which you're told to never get involved with. Anybody get that? Okay, there's some laughter. Another movie reference. But it's interesting, because this woman, who this city is named after, actually became so embittered and so disenfranchised and separated from her husband that she became his enemy. Again, we're looking at this church, the Bride of Christ, Laodicea. And this is who they were named for. The name Laodice or Laodicea actually means a judged people, or a people judged. There's a lot of coincidences here. So Laodicea, because of its location, it was on trade routes that came through. Laodicea was incredibly wealthy, much like our nation is today. If I told all of you, you are rich, would you believe me? You know, if you're, oh man, we got mortgage payments and hospital bills, and we got all that, you know, the price of gas is going up, we're getting killed. You know, we're having to budget and pinch our pennies. Would you feel rich? Except compared to the rest of the world, we are. So often we talk about our struggles and our issues, and one of the sayings that we often use is, well, I mean, let's be honest, I've got first world problems. Because there are people in third world countries that would give anything to trade places with us. They see us as incredibly wealthy. You know, nobody here is necessarily starving unless we're doing it to ourselves because we need to lose weight. Our country, as one of the first countries in the history of mankind, has too much food. We're killing ourselves with it. We're, most of the rest of the world is doing everything they can just to get enough to live. We are rich. Laodicea was incredibly wealthy. One of the examples of this, Flaccus, who was emperor at the time, in looking at the monies that Laodicea had, he seized the annual contributions of the Jewish synagogues in 62 B.C. Because they were sending it back to Jerusalem to support, you know, the Jews in Jerusalem, to support the temple. And he made a law that they were no longer allowed to do that. That money had to stay there. But he seized what they had, and it amounted to about 20 pounds of gold, which by today's standards is, I'm not even sure. I know a few years ago it was more than $400,000, but I think gold is at an all-time high right now. So let's call it $1 million. $1 million a year extra. They didn't take all their money and send it back to Jerusalem. They took a portion. Can you imagine us in Denver writing a $1 million check and giving it to the brethren in Colorado Springs? Yeah, yeah, Connie's. They were so wealthy. 2 years later, just like much of Asia Minor, and we know what happened to the brethren in Philadelphia, massive earthquakes struck, leveling whole cities. Philadelphia was leveled. So was Laodicea. And, of course, there was a lot of wealth. There was a lot of stuff coming out of Asia Minor. And Rome, these were prized cities in the empire. Rome, much like we would do in our country today if a city is leveled because of a hurricane or an earthquake, we're like, we got to get them back up. And we'd send the government in. We'd send in FEMA, and they would say, we're going to help you rebuild. So this is what Rome tried to do with Laodicea. And they're like, we're going to come in, we're going to take away no more taxes, we're going to give money, we will rebuild you. And Laodicea went, it's okay, we're fine. I mean, really? You should probably be asking us for a loan. We have so much. And we like our autonomy. We can do what we like. We don't need Rome. We're fine. We've got more than enough. And frankly, what we're going to build is going to be a lot nicer than what you would probably build for us. So they declined the offer. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine one of our cities declining government aid? I mean, even if they didn't need it, they'd probably say, yeah, sure. And the money would go into somebody else's pockets. But they had so much wealth. They're like, eh, we don't need your money. We're totally fine. Laodicea was famous, again, for their wealth. In banking, is expected, and I forget the year that this happened, but a number of Jews were resettled out of Babylon into Laodicea, about 2,000 at the time, and that was total, men, women, children. And it's believed that they had something to do with the banking institutions at that time, and they made a lot of money. They had so much gold, in fact, that not only did they mint their own coins, but they were able to cash checks for other kingdoms who were in war or who were like traveling and trying to rebuild. They were the bankers. Now, they got much of this wealth because of something which happened naturally in their area. There was a species of sheep that lived primarily just around Laodicea, and they had a very distinct and special type of pure black wool. And not only was it a very luxurious color, it was extremely soft, far more than what was expected. And this was a wool that was so highly sought after and prized that it was incredibly expensive, and they exported it for obscene amounts of money. And their wealth continued to grow. They didn't even have to worry about temples and stuff like that or feast days to bring in more money. It was a part of it, but they didn't really worry about it too much because they had other monies. They were also famous for their medical schools. Their medical schools where they had doctors, and people would travel from all over the known world at that time to seek treatment. One of the things that I think the primary portion of this school was ophthalmology, so eyes, healing eyes, treating eye conditions. And they had a very special salve or poultice that was developed that was specific to that area. There was a mineral that they mined and they treated and took care of there. And again, they were famous for it. And so people around the known world, if you were having difficulty, if you were losing your eyesight, if you had issues, you would travel to Laodicea. And again, this is a lot of money. And they took it in. They made this. And they were known for it. So Laodicea kind of had it all. There was very little poverty. Everyone had wealth. Everyone had money. It was a system where it flowed around and lifted everyone up on high. Only problem that they had was the water. Their water was nasty. In Colorado, we had pretty good water. Even the water that's gone through treatment facilities and stuff like that. Go to South Texas and drink water. Oh, it's not good. Not naturally. It's got an odor. There's a smell to it. Colorado water is awesome. Now imagine if you've got everything you need except no water. And without the water, it's hard to make your plumbing work. Now imagine that problem. But Laodicea, for all their wealth, they did not have a good natural source of water. And so they had to have it piped in through aqueducts that ran from neighboring cities. The city to the north was Hierapolis, and it was about 10 miles. And so they built aqueducts to funnel water in. And Hierapolis was known for incredibly healing hot springs, very, very hot water, very mineral-laden. This is the kind of stuff that we pay a lot of money to go to a spa and get, like, mineral baths. Again, this is what Hierapolis was known for. And so Laodicea needed this hot water, so they built the aqueducts and had it trucked in or had it piped in. Now, 6 miles to the east was Colossae. Now, Colossae had wonderful water. It was from the mountains. It was snow. There were creeks fissures in the rock that would, springs, yeah, that would bring in pure mountain water, kind of like Colorado water. And it was cold, very cold and refreshing. And they were famous for it. So Laodicea built more aqueducts to bring in cold water. The problem was that by the time that these waters actually reached Laodicea, from 10 miles away, moving just through gravity, and from 6 miles away, it wasn't hot anymore. The cold water wasn't cold anymore. It was tepid. Kind of like bath water when you don't want to be in there anymore. You're like, nah. It wasn't good. Now, growing up in the church, we often heard sermons about Laodicea, and they would talk about that you've got to be hot. You've got to have the zeal. You've got to have the fire of God's Holy Spirit within you. Or if not, God's like, I don't want you to be lukewarm. I would rather you're either hot or not. If you're not going to be hot and filled with this zeal and spirit, then I would rather you go away. Go be cold. I'll work with you later on. Now, that's not actually what Christ was writing to the brethren in Laodicea to say. Because the cold water that came in was good cold water. It was refreshing. They needed that. How many of you like coffee? Okay, yeah, my wife, both hands up. She normally, we don't do that in church. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, we like hot coffee. Now, how many of you like iced coffee? Not as many. Typically, we put stuff in it, sugar and creams and stuff like that. But I'll tell you what, on a really hot day, I've had some iced coffee. It was pretty awesome. I liked it. You know what I do not like? Room temperature coffee. Been sitting there, maybe, you know, we shut the pot off, and I'm like, oh, I'm talking to, or I set my cup down, and I forget about it for a little while, and I grab it, and I'm talking to somebody, and I'm like, oh, oh. 15 minutes ago, I liked it because it was hot. To be hot or cold, again, the heat was healing. The minerals that were in it. People traveled all over because it was so hot. And what it could do for your body was healing medically. The cold water, again, is refreshing. And, you know, nowadays people have rediscovered things like ice baths that they'll do for their body, for their health. Very good. So hot or cold, be this, but this lukewarm thing in the middle? That's a problem. Now, one of the other things that we need to be aware of, because Christ says, I would rather you were hot or cold, but since you are lukewarm, I will vomit you out of my mouth. Now, King James says spew, but the Greek word is actually vomit. This is one of the problems that Laodicea had. The water had a very high mineral content. And something that maybe we don't always know, water with a lot of minerals, especially if it is tepid, if it's kind of lukewarm, if you drink a lot of it, it'll have what's called an enemic or endemic effect, which will cause you to vomit, literally. There are ways that, like Ipecac, medicine or whatever, it will induce vomiting. That's what this does. So the people in Laodicea, for all their wealth, for all their material blessings, were nauseous a lot. It was a struggle to just have water to prepare your food with, to drink without wanting to vomit. Can you imagine living that way? But this is what Christ is saying for them very specifically. And he's using something very physical, a tangible thing that is a struggle for them day in and day out, no matter what. And he's saying, you've become like this spiritually. This would have hit to the core. Because this is something that they struggled with, they complained about. And they're saying, you're saying we're like that? I'm like that? Christ is telling them that your attitude makes me sick, makes me ill. Not just repulsed, but it hurts me. It bothers me so badly. It makes me nauseous. Have you ever had a relationship go south? Maybe it's with a spouse. Maybe it's with a boyfriend, girlfriend. Maybe it's with a family member. And it goes so badly, and you're so upset that it makes you nauseous. I think that's what Christ is saying. That this water, that their spirit, that their attitude, as the bride waiting for the groom, was actually enough to make them sick, nauseous. Other than that, life was pretty good in Laodicea. They weren't persecuted. Again, Laodicea didn't seem to enforce much in the way of the cult of Rome or the cult of Caesar. They had so much money, Rome didn't really have that much influence and power on. Everybody was well off. And unfortunately, it would seem that that was actually the problem. They had it too good. There was so much affluence. There was no difficulty. How many of you have heard the saying, hard times make hard men? Hard men make good times. Good times make soft men. Soft men make hard times. They had good times in Laodicea. It was good. It was good to be a Laodicean, except if you can handle the water. But the money's so good. Nobody's hurting for anything. You know, we might bicker and squabble about things that the rest of the country is like, what? And I think if we look at that in our own world today, we've got it so good that people aren't worried about survival. They're worried about what gender they are. Nobody had this problem during the Depression. You're a boy. You're a woman. Now get to work. You got a job to do. And forget about all this. Shut up. Work. We'll probably edit that out. But it's true. When you're busy trying to survive, you don't have time for this existential crisis. You're working. You're laboring. It's simple. When it gets too good, that's when we stray. That's when we run into problems. Brethren, how often when you are going through a trial, how much more do you pray? A lot more. That's normal. That is indeed human. When we're busy, when we're going about our own thing, we're going about our own lives, we're like, oh, I forgot. But when you're worried about survival, when you're worried about the next day, maybe the next meal, the next breath, we are talking to God continually. It's when we're not worried about that that we get distracted by all the other things that we need. Or that we think we need. When we are rich, we tend to forget. Christ again said, you believe that you have need of nothing. Laodicea didn't really feel like they needed Rome. And they didn't feel all that dependent upon Christ. Again, this relationship, I want us to think about that. You know, in the story I told at the beginning. How often, when things are going well, they were like, I don't need this. I don't necessarily need the support. I'm taking care of myself. Christ had to warn the children of Israel of the same thing. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 10. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 10. This is before they're going into the promised land. The land of flowing with milk and honey. The blessings all around. In verse 10, he says, so it shall be when the Lord your God brings you into the land which he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you large and beautiful cities, which you did not build. Houses full of all good things, which you did not fill. Hewn out wells for water, which you did not dig. Vineyards and olive trees, which you did not plant. When you have eaten and are full. Oh, I couldn't eat another thing. Oh, I'm more than satisfied. It says, then beware, lest you forget the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt, from the house of bondage. Affluence and wealth tend to make us forget God. It's happening in our world today. We've got so much, and we can look around and see problems. And there's a lot of people looking for ways to fix it, but very few are actually turning back to God. This is the problem with Laodicea. This is one of the reasons why God allows us to have sufferings, trials. One of the problems within Christianity today is the doctrine of prosperity. Well, if you just, you know, be a Christian, then God's going to pour out all these blessings upon you. Money, wealth, prosperity. But that could actually lead to our doom, our destruction. It is the trials which keep us clinging to Him. Think of this with the Apostle Paul. Paul himself said in 2 Corinthians 12 and verse 9, when he was suffering, he spoke of the thorn in the flesh, this affliction. And we don't know what it was. Some would say it was his eyes. Other than there's lots of different things about it, but it hurt him. It weakened him. 2 Corinthians 12 and verse 9, Christ responds to him in his prayers to have this affliction taken away from him, to be freed of it. And he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. For my strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Not strong in ourselves, not in what we have. We don't need your help. We're fine. When we are weak, then Christ is strong. He becomes our pillar. He becomes the rock that we cling to, because we can't do it on our own. Christ tells them at the end of this chapter, behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens it, I will come to him and dine with him, and he with me. Christ wants us to hear his voice. There's a lot of things that can keep us from doing that. Our pursuit of life, of liberty, of prosperity. I used to use the analogy of why we couldn't hear God. Sometimes it's because we're so busy working. You ever seen guys who are building something or breaking rock or pouring foundations? They'll use big jackhammers and they wear headphones or earphones. Earphones. Yeah. Earmuffs to protect their hearing. And they got all this racket, all this work going on. And you're trying to holler at them, get their attention. And they're like, what? I can't hear you. I'm working here. If we're so busy going about our way and our will that we can't hear the voice of Christ calling to us, then how do we open the door? How do we hear him? How do we have the intimacy of dining with him, of sharing that food and that meal, which was something which, again, we take for granted in our society because we've got so much food. To the brethren of Laodicea, they had abundance, but the rest of the world, if they invited you into their home, into their tent, and they gave you food, this is incredible value. And that's what Christ is asking for. Brethren, Passover is coming. Christ is at the door. And that's what we need to focus on. What is it that we need to get rid of? What is it that we need to give up? Laodicea had pride. They're pretty proud. They had everything they needed, right? But then there's other things that we have to consider. Hurts, difficulties, offenses. Again, this is an attitude that all of us can struggle with. I think this is, if we're honest, probably the era of the world in which we are living today. Again, I just look at the United States, look at Europe. We've had it so good for so long. And all sorts of immorality and idolatry has sprung up. It's all there. And this is our world that we live in. It has an impact. It seeps into us just like it did for all the churches in Revelation. They were all impacted by their society. We have to be aware of that and ask ourselves, well, which church am I? How is this influencing me? Now again, most often when we read at Laodicea, when we've looked at Laodicea, it is with condemnation. And yet Christ says, as many as I love, I rebuke and chasten. If he didn't dearly love Laodicea, he wouldn't have written them a letter. He loves them. This isn't a breakup letter. It's a save yourself letter. Forget all these other things and come to me. I want you to love me. I want you to need me. I want you to only feel complete when you are with me. Not trying to satisfy yourself with all these other possessions and worldly goods. None of that should matter if we're not with him. For the bride to look at Christ and say, you complete me. Without you, nothing else matters. I don't want anything else if I can't have you. That's what he's asking for. These are things that we have to consider in ourselves. He tells Laodicea, again, they had all the wealth in the world. They had so much gold. And he tells them, that gold doesn't matter. He says, buy from me gold that is refined in fire. That's trials, sufferings, the true precious gems, which will be a part of his kingdom. He tells them, buy white garments, which has always been a sign of purity, of humility, of righteousness. Again, they were so proud of their all-black clothing. Other people would be proud of a simple piece of Laodicean wool. One robe, one blouse. In Laodicea, they wore it all the time. It was, look what we have. He says, buy for me the white garments of humility, of purity and righteousness. Laodicea was famous for helping people with poor eyesight to have their eyesight restored, to have their health given back to them. And he tells them, buy the salve from me because you can't even see the reality. You think you have all this wealth. You think you have all this prosperity and the beauty of the clothing. But you can't see that you are poor, blind, and naked. And he tells them, I rebuke those whom I love. Again, this is a letter of hope. He talks about those who overcome will be invited in and granted to sit with him on his throne as he overcame and sat down with his Father on his throne. I want to finish by looking at 2 Corinthians. Again, letters which Paul wrote to the church in Corinth, which were corrective. 2 Corinthians 7, or excuse me, not 2 Corinthians, what am I saying? 2 Chronicles. We'll go back. 2 Chronicles. This is after the temple has been built, dedicated. 2 Chronicles 7 and verse 14. God knows that his people will stray. 2 Chronicles 7 and verse 14. He says, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. Now my eyes will be open and my ears attentive to prayer made in this place. For now I have chosen and sanctified this house that my name may be there forever. My eyes and my heart will be there perpetually. He wants us to turn back to him. He wants Laodicea to turn back to him and say, you complete me. Without you, there is nothing. If we will but humble ourselves. You know, in the movie that I talked about before, Jerry Maguire, after he pours his heart out to his wife, and he says, you complete me. I need you. I want to come home. She looks at him and she says, you had me at hello. That's what Christ wants to do with us. It's what he wants to do with Laodicea. It's what he wants to do with this world. Just come back to me. Let all these other things go. And we have to hear that. For those who have the ears to hear, let them hear what the Spirit says to the churches.